all the whole song is instructive. So who would like to pick the number? Which number we're going to pick a number between 1 and 8.
Number 4.
Okay, number 4. Number 4 says, "You have achieved the rare human body. Don't you care for this gift? If you do not serve the darling of Jashoda now, great sorrow awaits you at death. Emana, durlaba, means rare. Manava deho, a human body. Paiya, having achieved. Kikoro, what are you doing? Bhavana keho, you have not thought about it at all. Ebe, now, na bajile, you do not worship. Yashoda sutta, the darling of Mother Jashoda. Charame, ultimately, poribe, you will fall or die. Laje, in shame." Any comment about that instruction?
There is a verse that I was...
Do you mind using the microphone?
There is a verse that I was trying to find. I was looking through my notes. There's a famous verse in the Shastra that says that this human birth is very rare. Those who have it are very privileged to have it, because it is only in the human existence that there is the ability and the faculty of reasoning to be able to inquire into questions of knowing the absolute truth. That is not there in the lower species, like the cats and the dogs and the hogs. They do not have the ability. It's only humans who have it. Therefore, human beings should utilize their ability to inquire into questions of the absolute truth. Otherwise, it's a wasted existence. There's some verse there in the Shastra about this privileged human birth.
Labba sudulabam idam bahusambhavante. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
Labba sudulabam idam bahusambhavante. You'll find it's in the Srimad Bhagavatam, but you can look in under the first words, first line. Labba sudulabam idam bahusambhavante. Anushyamartadam. Anityam api hadira. Says the human form of life is anityam. It's not permanent. Can go at any time. What page, Rakshit Prabhu?
275,
Shloka book.
Shloka book, a page 275. Human form of life is anityam. No question about that, right? Does anybody have a question about that? Sometimes people think that they can... I met a man in Santa Cruz the last time we went on Sankirtan. He was of the opinion that maybe, perhaps, in the future, science would come up with some kind of chemical that we can inject so that we wouldn't have to die. So maybe that's true, huh? Doesn't seem like it. The Shastra is saying that human form of life, it's a nityam. Actually, what he said, he didn't say we wouldn't have to die. He said you wouldn't have to die for a very long time. It would prolong life. I said, but yeah, you still have to die, right? But it seems like we're going the opposite direction. There's so many advancements in technology. Just like Prabhupada points out, the car, the automobile, so convenient to drive around in a car. You know, it's nowadays it's like driving around in your living room. It's so comfortable. But now there's accidents every day. You tune into the traffic report, and 5 accidents here. It's inevitable. People are being crushed like little bugs out there driving around. And for every kind of advancement we make to prolong life or make it easier, there's some corresponding reaction, the law of unintended consequences. But human life, manushyam artadam, it has great value. Artadam means it's full of value. And that is, if you utilize it for spiritual advancement, you can take full advantage in the human form of life. But as Rakshit Prabhu pointed out, that nikshayasaya vishaya kalasarva tasyat means that sense gratification, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, it's available everywhere. So you shouldn't think it's very valuable at all. You can observe that if hogs get it, if dogs get it, if bugs get it, then why should you think it's of any value, really? Don't think it's any... They all get it for free. So don't think that you're getting something special just because it's dressed up, you know. So, nice quotation, Raksha Prabhu. This is the Avaduta Brahman instructing King Yadu in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Does everyone have an 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam at home? Raise your hand if you have an 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Raise your hand if you'd like an 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, we'll arrange it. 11th canto is very important. It's got very important instructions about the Bhagavat Marg all through the 11th canto. We should study it very carefully. Any other points from this shloka we picked out from Bhaktivinoda Thakur?
When it says great sorrow awaits you at death, are we talking about death itself or the fact that we might be transmigrating to a lower species of life? Probably both.
Yeah, probably both. I mean, it's, you know, it's a defining time, death. And when we come towards it, you know, it's a time of reckoning. So everything we've, if we put off spiritual life, it all comes to bear at the time of death. And, you know, after all, in the bhajan we are singing, Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago, he's pointing out that, as Lord Kapiladev did and to his mother, that the soul, when he or she is within the womb, prays to the Lord that he can remember the Lord and engage in his service. And actually, the fortunate souls in the womb say, I don't want to even come out. I want to stay in this miserable condition so I can remember you. But as soon as the soul comes out in this world and his senses become externalized, he forgets and he starts engaging in sense gratification. But he makes a promise to the Lord within the womb that I want to serve you. I just want to serve you. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, that Lord Chaitanya is saying, you've forgotten this promise. Remember you promised? So we're going on Sankirtan. Just remember everyone you're talking to has made a promise to the Lord within the womb that I will serve you. And now when they came out, they forgot. And now they think it's more important to design some chip or to, you know, put more stripes in toothpaste or something vitally important. But the only thing that's vital, that's important, is to remember Krishna. Anything else that strikes you about this shloka? Emana durlava manava deho. Yes, Prabhuji. Can you hand him the microphone?
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. I probably keep hearing these instructions all the while, but still we keep forgetting the instructions. So what I'm saying is that we know that human life is temporary and we should do devotional service. And still the amazing thing is that when we go to office, you know, we are so much engrossed in there. Sometimes if we... So there is a lot of gap between our practice, knowledge and realization. So hopefully someday I will also get the realization that every moment I have to serve in some way or the other. Because in every page of Srila Prabhupada's book, we hear this. So, and sometimes when we are in the class, we really feel yes, but when we go out, we don't forget it completely, but we still... Sometimes I feel, you know, still I'm giving 8 hours a day to office, you know, and it's such a waste of time. But then, and then we have to understand if you are not a brahmachari, then how basically do it? 8 hours a day, you still you have to go to office. That's part of your duty. So is that a waste of time or not a waste of time? How do you understand?
Yeah, there's a couple points here. Nice points. They're practical. Could you give me a Sri Yajurpanishad? There's a way, and it's the one that's stacked horizontally. Thank you. I'll read you something from a purport in the Sri Ashupanishad, Mantra 17. Who knows Mantra 17 from the Sri Ashupanishad? We should all know the Sri Ashupanishad. Just learn the whole Sri Ashupanishad. It's only 18 shlokas. It's much easier than learning C++. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains these verses in this way. One should regard a devotee of Krishna to be on a on the high path of the saints, even though such a devotee may seem to be sudarachara, a person of loose character. One should try to understand the real purport of the word sudarachara. A conditioned soul has to act for double functions, namely for maintenance of the body and again for self-realization. What are the double functions that a conditioned soul has to act for, Hare Krishna?
Maintenance of the body and self-realization.
Does everyone agree with that? What are the double functions of the soul? Anybody?
Maintenance of the body and self-realization.
So we have two functions, right? It's going. You can't stop maintaining your body, right? You can't stop going to office, especially if you live in the kind of society we live in now, because you know, what are you going to do? Live on the street, right? So you have a duty. You have to perform your body for the maintenance of your body, and you also have a duty to perform for your self-realization. Correct? So that's a parallel thing that's going to go on throughout this lifetime to one degree or another. Now, social status, mental development, cleanliness, austerity, nourishment, and the struggle for existence are all for the maintenance of the body. The self-realization part of one's activities is executed in one's occupation as a devotee of the Lord. And one performs actions in that connection also. One must perform these two different functions along parallel lines. Along what kind of lines? Because a conditioned soul cannot give up the maintenance of his body. What can't the conditioned soul give up?
Maintenance of his body.
The proportion of activities for maintenance of the body decreases, however, in proportion to the increase in devotional service. As long as the proportion of devotional service does not come to the right point, there is a chance for an occasional exhibition of worldliness. But it should be noted that such worldliness cannot continue for long, because by the grace of the Lord, such imperfections will come to an end very shortly. How soon will they come to an end?
Shortly.
Therefore, the path of devotional service is the only right path. If one is on the right path, even an occasional occurrence of worldliness does not hamper one in the advancement of self-realization. They're parallel lines. And we have duties to perform on both sides. You can't neglect one. Arjuna wanted to neglect his duty on the battlefield and just say, well, forget it. This is too difficult. I can't kill everybody. I'll just go off and be spiritual. And what did Krishna say? Yeah, just go be spiritual. No, he said, stay and fight. It's your duty. But, because you're doing it for me, it'll become spiritualized. So we have to recognize this balance and try to tip the scale more and more towards devotional service. Let's have three suggestions for how we tip the scale more towards devotional service and less towards just maintenance of the body. Three suggestions. Individual, separate suggestions. Number one.
Does it mean, your question, mean that the amount of time is reduced in material act or office work or something?
Does it mean that the amount of time is reduced in the office?
Or the consciousness?
Or is it just the consciousness? Who wants to answer that? Yes?
Before I answer it, maybe something that might be relevant would be the advice that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I believe, gave, that that one does not need to change one's social position. Being in one's social position, utilize the mind and the body to devote time to devotional service. And in the process, what will happen is that one will be able to conquer this material world and move beyond. So this lessening of time in the office and other things will follow automatically when one takes up devotional service, as one progresses in that. But in order to start on that, one doesn't have to abandon the current position. Stay in the position, but take up devotional service. With time, that entanglement or engagement in material activities will progressively decline.
Very nice point. This is a verse you can find in your shloka book, Jnani Prayasam Udapasya Namante Eva. It's in the 10th canto, 14th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. What's the verse? Page 255. Gyane prayasam udapasya namante eva jivanti san mukaritam bhavadiya vartam stane stita shutigatam tanuvan manobir he prayaso jita jito pyasitai strilokyam. Can somebody give Mataji a shloka book? Can you grab her shloka book? She got shortchanged. We don't want to shortchange anybody in here. Never shortchange the devotees or the Lord. So now you said something that actually by staying in one's position and performing devotional service, one conquers over the material world. But actually it's more than that. This verse says, jita ajito, that one conquers not just the material world, one conquers the Lord. Because the Lord is known as ajita, he's unconquerable. But there is something that does conquer the Lord, and that's bhakti, love. He's conquered by love. That's who Krishna is. That's God conquered by love. And so if one develops that love from whatever position one's in, then he'll be able to attain perfection. So the point is here, you can't change your position, stay in your position and try to increase the hearing and chanting. It may mean that you reduce the time that you spend in office. Eventually it might. In the meantime, there are examples that are given to us like King Ambarish. He was a king. He had all kinds of kingly duties. But he engaged all of his senses in the service of the Lord. And so while we're in this condition we're in, it's really hard to artificially move and try to increase anything. But what you have to do is take every opportunity that is given to you and fully take advantage of it. And I've given this example before, but it has to do with your circle of influence. Everyone has a certain circle of influence, and if you try to act outside of that circle of influence, you won't be successful. You'll become frustrated. But you do have a circle of influence, something that you can change in your own environment. And if you do that properly and carefully, then your circle of influence increases. And also, your contribution to devotional service will increase also. So what I mean is, if you can find some, first of all, there are personal victories you can have in your life. Like discipline is very important. Pramanais tat sadacharais tarabhyasair narantaram. We hear this from the Brahma Samhita. Lord Vishnu is speaking to Brahma and he says, Pramanais tat sadacharais. What is this sadachar? Sadachar means proper behavior. So there's a way in which if we behave properly, we'll be able to understand Krishna consciousness much easier than if we don't. And that sadachar means, rising early in the morning, performing Mangalartik, taking bath, chanting 16 rounds. This is also, there's this... following four regulative principles, no meat eating, intoxication, gambling, etc. And these things are very important for performing devotional service. Otherwise, we'll become dissuaded, by the modes of material nature. If we take what Krishna gives us, then he'll give us more. He'll give us more service. And he'll liberate us from just having to maintain the body and having to work hard all day long. But while we're in that situation, we should look for ways to connect that to Krishna consciousness. For instance, if we regularly give our income, whatever we're making from that, whatever we can, well, we still have enough to take care of our family and emergencies without hoarding. And then we give a portion of our income for spreading Krishna consciousness. There's so many things that you can do. You can build a temple, you can print literature, you can, build a library like Akurnath's doing over in Mayapur. There's so many things you can do with your money. And when you're working in the world, money is the honey. This is a statement in the Srimad Bhagavatam, actually. It says money is the honey. Prahlad Maharaj points this out. He says money is the honey that everyone's working hard for. He says mercenaries, they go and get killed for it. People do all kinds of hard work, you notice, and what are they doing it for? Money. There's I heard a section about Dubai right now. There's all kinds of people coming from around the world just to earn a little extra money in Dubai, and they get there and they find out they only have a, they have this kind of situation where they're in debt because they had to pay to get there to work, and then they'll never get out of it. They have to work eternally, basically, just to, you know, and they're sending money back to their family, and they have a debt to pay before they can actually get their visa back to go back home, and they're just stuck. So people are working hard for money. So if we sacrifice some of that to give it for Krishna, then that'll help us advance. So whatever situation you're in now, try to be steady in Krishna consciousness, in hearing and chanting, and utilize whatever kind of energy you can for Krishna's service. And above all, try to get good association. This is the prime cause for making advancement in devotional service, because devotees carry a potency, and that potency is the internal potency. That's Mahatmanastu Mam Partha Daivim Prakriti Mashrita. They're under the shelter of the internal potency, so there you may find those that are free. You know, that balance, their duty to the material life and their engagement in devotional service, they have no more duty to material life. They're only, it's very minimal, practically not even there. And their contribution to spiritual life is fully there. If you can get around devotees like that and render some service, then Krishna says, Tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. You go take shelter there and ask questions and, you know, render some service. Just by proximity, you'll get special mercy and advancement. It's a very powerful thing, but this is sadhu sangha. Sarva Shastra Koi, Lava Matra Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hoi. You get perfection just by a little bit of association with sadhus, or those who are not concerned with the material world. It's very powerful. Invite sadhus to your home. Yes?
So Prabhu, it is.
Microphone.
Therefore, it is desirous that over a period of time you do reduce engagement in maintenance of the body.
Yes.
It's possible, right?
Yeah, the Goswamis, they were, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, were ministers for the king. And when they saw Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after that they thought, we're getting out of here. And they did everything they could to arrange that, to leave. They just wanted to drop it all and go. And they arranged so that they could go follow Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And as they did, they gave up more and more things. Like Sanatana Goswami, he was put in jail because he claimed that he was sick. He took some sick days. And then when the king came to see, you know, what he was doing with the sick days and if he was actually okay, he walked in and Sanatana Goswami had hired a whole room full of Brahmins to study Srimad Bhagavatam. And the king said, I got a war to fight. Are you going to help me or not? And he said, I can't help you with your wars anymore. This is my new life. And he said, you know, you either help me or you're going to jail. Your brother already ran off and you're not doing this to me either. So he said, I can't help you. You're going to give pain to the Lord in Jagannath Puri. He was going off to with his soldiers to try to conquer Jagannath Puri, which he never did, but because of the strength of Maharaj Pratyaparudra. But he put Sanatana in jail, and there was a note passed in code to Sanatana Goswami, Rabrupa Goswami, which told him about a bunch of bribe money that was held at a local merchant's place. He was able to get that money transferred over, and he offered it to the guard, and he gave the guard a good reason to let him go. He said, you know, I'm going to Mecca, and if you let me go, you'll get the benefit of that. And he told him also, look at, tell the king that I went down to the river to pass, and when I did, I jumped in with all my chains on, and you never saw me again, and you'll be off the hook, plus you'll have all this gold. What do you think? And he said, okay, you can go. So he ran away. He ran away from everything. He gave up his ministership, and he went across the mountains and almost got killed by dacoits. And you know, he had one servant with him. He finally sent him home. He had met a relative on the way to meet with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who had given him a nice blanket. And when he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was disheveled. He had been traveling in the mountains, and he had this one nice blanket on, though. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu kept looking at him. And then he understood in his mind. He said, this blanket is not very much appreciated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he went down to the river and he found an old Bengali man who was washing out this old kind of quilt that was all torn up with holes in it and stuff like that, and said, "Listen, how about if we trade? And you know, here's this really expensive, valuable chudder that he had." And the Bengali man said, "Why are you, you know, teasing me like this?" He said, "No, I'm serious." "And really?" He goes, "Sure, I'll trade." So then Sanatana Goswami came back to Sri Chaitanya with his old torn blanket, and Mahaprabhu was very pleased. And Raghunath Das Goswami, he came from a very rich family. They were billionaires, actually. And his family, his mother and father were very pious. They were great devotees of the Lord. But they wanted him to get married. And they wanted him to stay put and you know, do as they had done. Be a good devotee, but, you know, let's not get ridiculous here. But Raghunath Das Goswami wanted nothing to do with family life, even when he was a little boy. He knew about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he wanted to run away and join up with this band of devotees. And so his family, you know, they tried everything. They tried locking him up for a while. And then they got him a really nice, qualified, beautiful wife, got him married, but he just slept outside the house. He never wanted to have anything to do with that situation. He kept running away, and they'd bring him back. And finally, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Listen, don't act like a crazy fellow. Just go along with everything, whatever they're doing, and when the opportunity's right, then you can go." And actually, he was so skilled, he was so expert, that at one time, the IRS came to the house because there was some discrepancy in what the his father, was a billionaire, and there was some discrepancy in the taxes, so the IRS showed up. And they took Raghunath Das away they grabbed him, and they were going to put him in prison or something like that and hold him. But he was so expert that he talked to the IRS agents and he convinced them he came up with a way to balance, you know, whatever the debt was, and also convinced them they should let him go. He was such an expert person. And later on, there was an opportunity for him to run away, and he finally ran away. And all the time his mother was saying, "Why don't you chain him up?" told his father. And she said, "I've already chained him. I've given him a pension fund like no other. He's got a trust fund, and he's got a beautiful wife." He said, "If he can break free from these chains, there's no other worldly, you know, iron chains that can hold him." And he ran away, and when he joined Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu put him under the care of Swarup Damodar. He said, "You are the Raghunath of Swarup Damodar." And Raghunath Das Goswami, still, he wanted some personal instruction from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But you see, this is the Lord. He came to join the Lord, and he said, "Okay, you're under him. You're under this devotee." And he said, you know, he knows, you get instruction from him, it's better than getting instruction from me, he was saying practically. But he said, "No, please give me some personal instruction." And he's saying, "Just talk to Swarup Damodar." And then finally he said, "Okay, I'll give you a personal instruction." And he said, "Don't eat nice food. Don't wear nice clothes. Don't do what materialistic people do. Don't have a connection to this material world at all. Stay completely aloof from it." And he gave a famous instruction to Raghunath Das Goswami, who took that to his heart. And he lived in more and more austere means. One day he would just beg a little bit of food outside of the gate at Jagannath Puri. And then after a while he thought, "I'm just like a prostitute. I'm standing here thinking this person might give, this person might not give." So then he went, and eventually he ended up, there's at Jagannath Puri, there's these 84 offerings a day or 54 offerings a day. And then, you know, all the prasads all everywhere, all over Jagannath Puri, everyone's eating. And then, you know, the animals get to eat, and because some of the prasad goes rotten, they give it to the cows to eat, you know. And then there's some of that that's so bad it just like floats away and nobody will touch it. He would take that. You know, he'd collect it up, the rotten grains of rice and stuff, and then he'd wash it off a little bit. And that's what he was living on, because he didn't want to bother anybody, and he'd just take that prasad that had, you know, been discarded, or the remnants of the remnants of the remnants. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became very pleased upon him. He came to his place once, and he took some of that prasad, even though Raghunath Das tried to stop him from taking it. He said, why have you been holding back from me this nectar that you're eating? But he's very, very, very austere. And this example of the Goswamis, Prabhupada brought forth, Chekva Turna Mashesha Mandalapati Shainim Sada Tuchava. They kicked off all connection to material life as insignificant. And Bhakti Parishanu Bhavi Virakti Ranyatra. It says in the Srimad Bhagavatam that when we take to surrendering to the Lord, naturally there's three things that happen. One thing is that we'll develop bhakti. Then also Anubhava, we'll be able to see directly for ourselves who is the Supreme Lord. He'll be directly revealed to us. And Virakti Anyatra means detachment from all other things that aren't connected to Krishna. So it's not that we have our, we'll maintain our personal life forever and that, we hang on to these things and still, this one's for me, that one's for the Lord. Here's my bank account, that's the Lord's bank account. Eventually, everything, it's mandatory, actually, Vedically speaking, that, after you're mid-aged, you should give up everything. You should aspire for this. And simply be a full time absorbed in hearing and chanting 24 hours a day. This is the essence of all of advice by Rupa Goswami. Tanama Rupa Charitari Sikirtananu Smrityo Kramena Rasana Manasi Niyoja Tishtan Vraje Tananu Ragi Chananu Gami Kalam Nayer Akilam Ityupadesha Saram. The Saram, Akila, of all advice, Upadesh, is that one should arrange one's life 24 hours a day, nicely hearing, chanting, remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And one should reside in Vrindavan Dham. One should stay in a holy place. Sit down there permanently. And then there's more advanced stages where we, where we aspire to follow in the footsteps of a particular devotee. So, these stages are there. And it's not that we, we should hold on to mixed devotion our whole life, but we can't artificially move out of it. We can't just dump it and say, I'm going to go now, because the conditioning comes from within ourselves. There's a Buddhist saying that wherever you go, there you are. And that's true. You can go to the holy Dham. Some people say, well, I'll just move to the Dham and I'll just sit down here. But if you haven't done service, if you haven't cultivated, you go to the Dham, and next thing you go, well, maybe I'll go to Delhi and get a video. I've seen it. Devotees have moved to Vrindavan because they think, well, we'll be more spiritual here. They get to Vrindavan and then they'll think, well, I really would like to see that new video, that new DVD that just came out. So they drive to Delhi and they'll watch a DVD. And then they come back, and then after a while they're driving to Delhi three times a week rather than, next thing you know, it's like, well, I think I'll move back to Florida, Because I just watch DVDs all the time. It's not a product necessarily of moving around from one place to the next. Where you sit down, you're still going to confront what's in your heart. That's what comes up. So, stane stita shruti katan tanavan manobir, the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was saying, you can't artificially change your external situation without changing your internal situation. And where do you start that? From wherever you are now. You have to learn how to do that. Like if you have a house, a lot of people, they have tea parties at their house once a week. There's all kinds of people, they play bridge and they invite their friends over for bridge, right? And so we should do that only for invite the devotees over, have people over. And, utilize what time everyone else does for all these kinds of activities for devotional service, then we'll make advancement. And gradually we should increase that proportion more and more, inch it up. Whatever inch Krishna gives you, take it. If you get some opportunity to do some little service, grab it, because you never know where it's going to lead. One little thing can lead to a huge thing. I started having programs at my house about 17 years ago. And at first, there was only like one devotee that was coming over. Maybe that was because I wasn't serving prasadam at the time. That made a big difference. But still, it helped me a lot. It helped me to have a day, once a day a week, when I was open house, when devotees would come over. You have to get the house ready. You have to get your consciousness ready to receive the devotees, and they'd come over. And, gradually more and more devotees started coming, and then it became a big event. And it's helped me over the years to have devotees over to my house, to serve them prasadam and to hear and chant with them. And then one thing happened. some devotees were visiting from Japan and they came to my house and they said, oh, this is really nice. Can we do this in Japan? Would you like to come to Japan? So they ended up going to Japan, and that led to something else, led to something else. And so one little thing that's stane stita, stay in whatever position you're in, but dedicate it nicely to Krishna, and he'll open up the door in so many other different ways so that we can... it's a privilege to be able to engage in devotional service. It's not that you can just say, just walk in with your shoes on. You can't just bust into the spiritual world. You have to deserve to go there. And, you know, that takes desire, great longing, and endeavor. And then gradually, you know, it's like a hard-fought war. Krishna will give you that facility to engage in his service. So it's a great privilege. And so we should pray like that when we chant, when we're saying, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare. What are we saying? We're actually saying, Krishna, please engage me in your service. We're begging him like that. In the bhajan we're singing here, the Bhaktivinoda Thakur is using the words mage, which means he's begging. He said, I begged for the holy... You have to beg for the holy name. You have to beg for service. It's a privilege. It's the greatest privilege to have some service in the Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan movement. So if we can get that, then we can actually then make that our career. Make a career in Sankirtan. Why not? I mean, what's the point, you know, working for some big corporation your whole life? You know, what are they making that's actually important for the world? And what's Lord Chaitanya making? Try to get a career with Lord Chaitanya. It's like in the old days, people used to try to get a government job, right? It's like, ah, I got to... Nowadays, it's, you know, it's not worth that much. But it used to be like, you got a government job? Oh, you're set. You don't even have to do anything. And, you know, you can just live nice your whole life. You get medical insurance and a pension, you know? That's still true for politicians. You know, they can work for 2-3 years and they get this incredible pension. And, you know, they're just kind of taken care of. So think of that for Lord Chaitanya's movement. Get a job in this corporation. Lord Chaitanya is the CEO. They work under Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and Srila Prabhupada, and then you got yourself a real job. That's the real... If you got that, you really have something. So that's available. You can get that job. There's all kinds of applications. The Sankirtan movement's going on all over the place, and there's unlimited opportunities, so we can engage. But we have to beg for it. It's not like... You know, you can just walk in and say, give me some service. You know, you have to desire it. You have to, you know, want to have it. And then be able to keep it and understand what it is that you have. You have to actually hear and chant and have sadachar. Because sometimes people have gotten a job in the Sankirtan army and in Lord Chaitanya's corporation, and then they forget what it is. They think, oh, maybe it's more important to go get some other job. And if we don't maintain our level of hearing and chanting, then we will forget how this is the most important thing. A lot of people don't think it's very important. Like that fellow last night I met on the street, you know, and he was telling me, oh, well, this, that, the other thing, everyone has some belief in something, it's all the same, you know. It's no big thing. And when you die, you're finished. Very original philosophy, sir. So you don't need it. Have a nice day. Good luck. You know. Anyways, Maya is very strong, so we should be vigilant and you know, feel fortunate if we could have some little service to the devotees in the Sankirtan movement. That's great fortune. So today we have an opportunity, because it looks like the weather's going to cooperate. Lord Indra's given us a break. And we can go out to distribute Krishna consciousness. And it's very important the mood we go out in, that we go out in a prayerful mood. It's important in any aspect of devotional service. But when we go out to distribute Krishna consciousness, we should pray for the Lord's help by constantly chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. This is the first and most important aspect of distributing books, is to keep the mantra going. When you're packing up your boxes, when you're getting in your car, when you get to your spot, when in between when you're talking to people, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Just depend on Krishna. like the mind saying, where are we going today? What's it going to be like when we get there? Who's going to stop and who's going to talk to me? Don't worry about it. Just chant Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram, Ram. And feel like, Krishna, I'm just trying to, you know, get a job in your corporation here. And I want to do some service. Please engage me. And please send me the people. And just, you know, let me be an instrument in this. So we should constantly chant and pray. And then we should feel some appreciation that, you know, that everyone who comes in contact with this will get some benefit. And especially we'll keep in mind to how to leave a good impression with each person that's going away. Because, you know, people really do notice what we're saying to them, how we treat them. So treat each person as an individual and not like as a statistic. Or, you know, like this is just another person to get to the next person if this one's not interested. But take time to look at each person as a soul. Yastu sarvani bhutani atmani vanupashati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tatuna vijagupsate. What does vijagupsate mean? Anyone who was here on Wednesday night class? It means to hate. So if you see everyone, if you take the time, actually the verse says if you systematically see every person as a spirit soul in connection to the Lord, that you will not hate anybody. You'll actually have a connection to each person. So this is Sankirtan. Yes tu sarvani bhutani. See everything in relationship to Krishna. And if someone rejects you or says something, you know, hurtful or something like that, can you see that in relationship to Krishna too?
Purification.
It's purification. And you can, you know, you can react to that. You can practice. Like someone honked at me really loud the other day. I was slowing down and let him by, and then, you know, he didn't understand. You know how there's miscommunication on the road, and he was like, honk! And you know how, like, if somebody honks at you on the road, then there's some way, you know, there's this road rage. Well, I didn't really feel that. At first, I felt like, well, maybe I should honk back, and then I thought, no, he, you know, it was just a misunderstanding, and I just didn't react, and I took a deep breath, and I kept driving and things. And so there's a way we can practice yoga while we're out on Sankirtan, too. Be detached. Be friendly to everybody, even if they're not friendly to you. This is a good opportunity to practice yoga and see how fixed we are in that. And be a kind friend to all living beings. This is Krishna's instruction in the Bhagavad Gita. Be a kind friend. And so that's not hard. That's fun, to go out and just be a kind friend to everybody that we meet. Think about it, you know, from this second forward today. How are you going to be a kind friend to every person that you meet? Narhari? How are you going to be a kind friend to everybody you meet? Give him the microphone. This is going to be profound. What a meditation. Let's hear this. Okay, go ahead.
I guess I can stop at myself. Not to be upset with whatever they do or whatever they say. And most importantly, remember that we are serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so we should always remember that we are His servants, and we should constantly chant. That's going to put us in the right pedestal so that we can see ourselves in relationship as spirit souls. So that's one very important instruction, is always chanting. And then when we have that consciousness, then obviously it's very, it becomes easy. These are the necessary, let's say, I don't want to use the word techniques, but the necessary methods by which we can be in the proper frame of mind to treat each other with respect. So if we have that frame of mind, then it becomes easy to be a kind friend, see that that we are representing Guru and Krishna, so we want to do what is in their best interest. And even if we don't even if they don't take, they don't give a donation, be detached. Just see it as an opportunity for them. And if they don't take, maybe next time. But at least you are making the effort, so that's
I told you it would be profound. That was very nice. That this idea of respect and being humble is very, very powerful. We're going out for our own purification, and we should see how we can respect everybody. And unless we see them as spirit soul, then where's the question of respect, actually? But we should respect everyone. Lord Chaitanya saw, be ready to offer all respects to everybody and don't expect anything for yourself. Amani na manadena kirtaniya sadahari. And that way you can go on chanting. So this was a profound statement from Narahari Prabhu about this continual chanting and showing respect to others. Don't expect anything in return. The great capitalist, Lal Babu, Hare Krishna, was a very rich man, but at a point in his life, he gave up everything and he went off to build a temple for the Lord. And he had many political enemies and things like that, but after he became a devotee, he went door to door and collected, you know, a few rupees here, rupees there, even from his political enemies, and was very humble like that. And so this should be our feeling, that we're going out as humble beggars. Prabhupada signs his poem when he's coming to the United States as, you know, the most insignificant beggar. So we should feel like that, very humble when we meet people and give them respect, so that they feel it from us. They feel respect. This is more important than somebody getting a book, that they feel that respect is coming from us. The books will naturally go out. Our first goal is to purify ourselves and to leave everyone a good impression. And then naturally, you know, people will be attracted. And they'll want to see what we have. They want to see what we have. We want to collect names today. Srinivas Prabhu has made up a nice template, and he's actually even holding it in his hand right now. I know that just because I know Srinivas. And this is nice and clear. Today, everyone should take these templates with you, and when you meet people, take the extra step to make a connection to them by getting their name and address and email. And Social Security number. Just kidding. Bank account, Social Security, and passwords. No, just kidding. Just connect with people who are nice and ask them, would you like to be on our mailing list? Can I get your email? And, you know, the people who are willing and ready, they'll go ahead and give it to you and collect those. So we want to get in the habit of meeting and connecting with people through all these different ways that we have to connect with people so that we can bring them closer through education and through, you know, our programs that we're having here and online as well. So collect names today. That's one thing to remember. Anything else that we should remember today as we go out? Yes?
Just a question. When we are telling them about a book, so...
You want to use the microphone?
We are telling them about the book, you know, what, so, and they ask, oh, does this contain this? So, does this contain that? So, it should be, are we supposed to bluff and say, yes, it contains everything, or are we supposed to say, no? Therefore, if someone asks, is this going to have some yoga, you know, which we know very clearly that they mean some physical yoga, and it's obviously all our books are about bhakti yoga. The point is that, is the goal to just give them a book and just tell them, yeah, everything is okay? Or, be able to be real and be able to see the lies, transcendental lies or not so, and stuff like that.
Right. Personally, I can just tell you my personal experience is it's more powerful to be very upfront and truthful and straightforward. What we have is very desirous. People actually want it. If we appreciate that ourselves and present it as it is, Akurnath is a good example of this, don't mind, but he preaches very straightforwardly. He'll just, if you hear him out there, it's like hearing a Bhagavad Gita class or a Srimad Bhagavatam class. He'll just Here's the Krishna book. This is about Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here's one of the pastimes when he did this. And you know, he's very straightforward. There's no, and he does fine. And I find the same thing. If I'm straightforward with people and I tell them, you know, what's in the book, and if they ask a question, I answer in a straightforward way, that people pick up on the confidence more than anything else. If I'm trying to, like, shave the, you know, truth a little bit so that they'll, like, appreciate it and buy it or something like that, then they start getting, like, a little suspicious or something. But if you just stand and deliver what we have, it's very powerful. You have nothing to lose and all to gain. Yes, sir, Karunath Prabhu.
You can often find that what they're interested in really is in the book.
Yes.
Find a way to present. For example, if they're asking about yoga, you know, you can say it's not about the exercises, the physical exercises, but this is the philosophy of yoga. You know, that really yoga is not just about keeping the body fit and healthy and live a long time, but it's really about you know, peace of mind and being able to meditate and those who really know yoga will study this book. Krishna, I tell them when I distribute Bhagavad Gita, I say, Krishna is known as the master of all yogis. So this is the most authentic book about the real philosophy of yoga.
And this is the best way to present, is to encapsulate, get little sutras. Like this thing that Karunath Prabhu just said in a short paragraph about the difference between one yoga and another. I heard one devotee, Damodar, who was distributing, he would just tell people, he'd say, yeah, it's about yoga, but some yoga's just for stretching your legs. This one's for stretching your mind. You know, and they go, oh, wow, okay, that's better, you know? And that's saying the same thing, basically, like, yeah, we have yoga, but it's a little different from what you think, you know? You could say it in one enticing sentence. This is the art of book distribution, actually, is how to package things in such a way, you know what their mentality is. And you don't want to, like some devotees used to say things like, you know, Led Zeppelin, ZZ Top. They name, like, rock and roll musicians. So, like, they're, you know, they just, like, start naming things that people might, like, think were interesting or something like that. And then they go, yeah. And you go, yeah, read this book. And they weren't really sure what it was about. It's better to be straightforward, but do it in such an expert way that people will be enticed by it. Because, yes.
Actually, so we are doing this in Pune also. We are doing every weekend we are going. So, and generally I do the straightforward way. And, you know, if they ask of yoga. Basically, it's philosophy. From Prabhupada books, we understand what is yoga and stuff like that. But suppose someone asks, or does this have information about Dashavatar?
Yes. Well, let me give you some. This is called verbal judo. It means that there are certain ways of communicating, certain basic things that you can keep in mind, in order to keep the conversation going in the way that you want it to go. And I'll tell you one very powerful technique to practice and remember all the time when you're out preaching, is whoever's asking the questions is leading the conversation. Right? If I'm asking a question, I'm leading the conversation. So if they ask you a question, the best way to take back control of the conversation and which way it's going is to answer a question with a question. Everyone please repeat that. Answer a question with a question. Questions are the answer. Questions are the answer. So it sounds like double talk, but it's really true. And this is just a verbal technique, because if somebody asks me a question, it's like, is this book about the Das Avatar? What's a question I can answer them with? I can get into a whole long, protracted explanation. Better thing is, that's a very kind of amorphous question. If I say yes, no, I'll just, you know, it's the wrong answer. Say, yes, it's about Das Avatar. No, it's not about the Das Avatar. But if you try to explain how it is or something, you get into something, they get on the mental plane, or you say, no, it's not, and they go, no, then I'm not interested. You know, or it's like, is this Hinduism? How are you going to answer that? Nobody even knows what Hinduism is. Even Hindus don't know what Hinduism is. You know, the government of India doesn't know what Hinduism is exactly. It's an amorphous term, and you can't answer that question. You say, is this about Hinduism? If you say yes or no and answer the question, you're finished. But you answer the question with a question. Is this about Hinduism? What do you know about Hinduism? That's a better answer to the question. Questions are the answer. Is this about Hinduism? What do you know about Hinduism? Well, you know, this, that. No, it's not that. Is this some kind of cult? I don't know. What's your definition of a cult? You know, let's answer the question with a question. Is this about the Das Avatar? Oh, do you study the Das Avatar? Are you a devotee of the Das Avatar? You know, find questions to answer their questions with. There were two guys walking down the street in New York City. One New Yorker and one guy from out of town. And so the guy from out of town was asking a lot of questions about the city, and every time he asks a question as they're walking down the block, the New Yorker would answer his questions with another question. And after about four or five blocks, the guy from out of town started getting a little exasperated, and he said, "Listen, every time I ask you a question, you answer me with another question." He says, "Why do you do that?" And the New Yorker turns to him and he goes, "Why do you ask?" So you remember that if you want to stay a little bit in control, the other thing it does is it redefines what they're asking. Because a lot of times people just ask things and they don't even know what it means. They're just asking a question, but you want to redefine it so you can help them, you know, to come to a better conclusion. So practice answering questions with a question, and you'll find that if you're asking the questions, in fact, it's nice to start off with asking questions. Now, I do have some introductions that I use that are a little more generic, you know, to introduce. Like some people, when I stop, I'll say, like the first thing I do before I just go up and hand them a book, I don't just walk up to people and say, "Here, have a book, have a book, have a book," because they don't know who I am or, you know, why they're supposed to take a book or what it's about or do they have to pay for it or anything like that. I first ask them a simple question like, you know, "Are you from Santa Cruz? Are you from somewhere else?" And or if I notice something about what they're wearing, like if they're wearing a shirt or a hat or something that has a logo or something like that, like say if someone has a shirt that says Illinois on it, Illinois State University, I go, "Illinois State University." That's all I have to say because they're the ones wearing it, right? So if I notice it and I go, "Illinois State University," that's about all I have to say because then they'll go like, "Oh, yeah, Illinois State University, and here's a line, you can take it or don't take it or use your own that's an equivalent of this, but this is something I say all the time that's very powerful. It doesn't really mean anything, but it connects me immediately to the person. Like I'll say, "Illinois State University," and they'll look at me and go, "You know about Illinois State University?" And I go, "Now you're talking my language." "Now you're talking my language." Just say that one time, see how it feels.
"Now you're talking my language."
Yeah, and what does it mean, you know? It doesn't really mean anything, but to them it's like a big deal. Like I'll say, you know, they'll have a hat that says "Free Tibet" or something like that. "All right, Free Tibet." And they go, "Free Tibet?" And you go, "Yeah, now you're talking my language." And it's a very generic thing, but it makes a connection, immediate connection to people. So that's one thing, to make a connection with people. You know, notice something about them and bring it up, and then when they say something about it, you can say, like, "Yeah, now you're talking my language," and just shake a hand with them. And then, when there's a connection, then I say, "Well, since, you know, like the idea is, since you're from Santa Cruz, or since you're into Tibet, or since you're from Illinois, and we're both talking the same language, here, I'll show you one of these." And then I put the book in their hand. And a common thing that I tell people is a book about yoga and meditation shows you how to get free from stress. Have you ever heard that one before? It's a book about yoga and meditation, shows you how to get free from stress. And that calms a lot of people down. And then I can get into more specifics from there, because immediately they want to know something, like, "What are you handing me? Are you going to start telling me that I'm the way, the truth, the life, no man comes to the Father except by me? Or is there going to be something fanatical?" But if they hear a simple line, like it's a book about yoga and meditation, shows you how to get free from stress, and then the first thing I do after I say that is to ask a question, because whoever's asking the question is leading the conversation. So they'll say, "You've heard of stress before, right?" Ask them that question. And it doesn't matter if they say yes or no. Like, if I ask Srinivas, "You've heard of stress before, right?" "No, it happens to me." "I can tell. I can tell by looking at you, because you don't look very stressed to me. You look very peaceful." "It's your eyes," and I make a connection with their eyes, and I say, "It's your eyes, I can tell. You look like a very spiritual person." And to me, that's my way of connecting with people on a spiritual platform, because, like, I'm looking at Narahari Prabhu right now, in his eyes. And I'm thinking, it's amazing, because there's a consciousness looking back at me. And I'm thinking, what is that? There's a soul inside there, and we're making some connection. It's not just the eye is just a lens, but he's actually in there. So I'll say, it's your eyes. You look very spiritual. What do you do? What kind of spiritual? You must have some kind of spiritual practice. What do you do? And then that's a jumping off point for talking about the book. Those are a few basic things. I'll answer questions with a question when you, if unless it's like an obvious thing or it's something that you want to answer and you feel it would be beneficial. But if you practice that, and also collecting little sutras means ways to present the philosophy in one sentence that give people a clear idea about what we're doing. That's, you know, like witty, like that idea about, is it about yoga? Yes, but some yoga, types of yoga show how to stretch your legs. This one shows you how to stretch your mind. You know, it's not pinpoint accurate exactly, but it gives them the idea that this is a different kind of yoga, and it does it in such a way that's enticing for them. So you can collect those kind of things by listening to other distributors. When you hear something someone else says, like, well, that's a good one, write it down and then try it yourself and then collect those. It's like Arjuna, when he went around to traveling, he fought with all kinds. He even fought with Lord Shiva. And what did Lord Shiva give him after he had a fight? Pashupadashram, Pashupatra. Ashtra. He gave him this special weapon. And then he collected weapons from all over the place. And when he got to battlefield of Kurukshetra, he was ready with all these weapons. So we should do the same thing. When we go out, be receptive to the environment and note what's going on, what's working and what's not working, and make notes of it, of how to utilize it the next time and incorporate it into your repertoire and learn from what other people are doing successfully. And then we'll make progress. Any other point about today, what we're going to do? Yes?
Probably one question, like...
Can you use a microphone?
Some of the points that were brought up was that we have to be humble. We have to be humble. And we should also have the appreciation for the knowledge so that we can give it to others. But we also hear that we should know some kind of, you know, some key phrases or aphorisms that we can put it. So, like, if we don't know this, are we disqualified for doing some distribution just on the basis of appreciation for the knowledge and just our humble attitude?
Well, see, there's two parts to this. One is, you know, we talk about seeing the soul within everybody and being very humble when you go out. And then we talk about techniques and other kinds of things. You actually need both to be well-rounded to go out and do Sankirtan. Because what happens often, we talk about just be straightforward, just go out and, you know, be really humble and stuff like that. And then a devotee goes out for the first time on the street or something like that and goes, I can't stop anybody. Or, you know, like, you know, how come they just walked away with the book? Or how come, there is a little technique to it too. So there's a balance. And it's like anything else. You know, if you put a violin in front of me, I'll just make a bunch of screeching noises because I don't even know how to hold it. I don't know, you know, I've seen people do it before, but I wouldn't be able to get a sound out of it really that would be pleasing to anybody. Until someone came in and showed me a little bit, and then I practiced over and over again. And after about 3 weeks, maybe I'd get one note out that was pleasing. You know, and it's the same way with book distribution. We go out with this idea of humility and practice that. But at the same time, we also have to be like a doctor. You know, a doctor learns certain skills in order to help people. He doesn't just go in there and, you know, depend on his goodwill. But he also learns, you know, how to use a scalpel, and he practices on a cadaver. And, you know, so we should practice these things so that we can help people. We're really going out to inject Krishna consciousness, and you can become expert at preaching. There are all kinds of devotees who are expert at presenting the philosophy in a certain way that people will be attracted to it. And there's a way to present books and prasadam and yourself and everything when you're out in public, so that people will be attracted and think, well, I just met a nice person. I just met a, you know, someone who's actually spiritual. But just by being humble and things like that, it may not do it completely. You may have to learn a few things. Like when you get actually out on the street, you'll see that people are moving kind of fast and their minds are really wrapped up in what they're doing. And, you know, if you just walk up and say, hey, Hare Krishna, take a look at this, you'll meet some people that'll stop. But you'll also find that, you know, there's a lot of situations where you go, what should I have done there? And then you watch your Karanath and you go, oh, that's what he did. You know, or you know, watch any of the distributors who are getting used to, like, how to take care of somebody so that they feel more comfortable. Because really, you're dealing with their mind out there a lot of times, and their mind's going, no, don't take it. And you have to, like, you know, be able to set their mind aside for a second so you can help their soul. And so there's ways to do that in a way that they feel appreciated, they feel respected, and they are. But it takes practice. You know, the repetition of doing it over and over again. When I first started doing book distribution, you know, I remember when I started doing book distribution in San Francisco, and then I had been doing it for some months, and then they asked me to go to Chicago to get trained up in the airports. And there were devotees there that had been doing it for some time and really expert at it. And it was so hard when I got into the airport at Chicago O'Hare Airport. People were moving so fast. I was young. Everyone seemed older than me, and like it was a, you know, an ocean, and I felt like a you know, I was just getting bounced around. And I remember sometimes I get so frustrated I just walk down the corridor by myself and start crying because it was like I really wanted to do it and I couldn't do it. But gradually I just watched what other people did and I'd practice and practice, and then I'd feel like, oh, now I know how to present to this kind of person, like. Every kind of situation, there are stereotypical situations even that you can learn how to deal with certain kinds of people. And you learn that and add it to your repertoire. And you can really only get that by doing the repetition and, you know, doing it over and over again and experiencing it. Right, Dianiti?
Yeah.
Yeah. Rakshit Prabhu. Microphone?
A question that... whether in approaching people, the ways or questions that are normally used in the social context can also be used. Such as, you gave an example, are you from Santa Cruz, are you from San Jose?
Yeah.
And often I've tried it and they might give just a one-line answer, no, I'm not from here, I'm from somewhere. But other ways of greeting them, such as it can be good morning or it can be good afternoon. How are you today? And things like that, such as those that are used in social situations, whether they can also be tried in order to establish the connection.
Sure, yeah. Sure. Yeah, and also, everyone has their own way of doing it. Yes, Prabhuji.
So, also, is there particular time for which we have to pursue a particular person, just give up on him and go to the next one?
Yeah, that's a good question about pursuing people, and that is to, we have to be really sensitive about whether a person is a ripe fruit or an unripe fruit, or somewhere in between, and we have to make a judgment call, remembering that the first thing is to leave people with a good impression, right? So, keep this example in your head when you go to pick fruit, and you're going to look for the ripe fruits. And when there's an unripe fruit, what do? Grab onto the fruit and bring the whole branch down, right? Hang on to it, like start yanking. No, you just let it go. So a little detachment really helps. What we do is we use sonar when we're out there. If you ask a question to somebody, or you say like good morning or something like that, and somebody looks at you and goes, oh, good morning, how are you? Then you know you have some person that you can talk to. If you say good morning and go, no, I'm in a hurry. You don't have to chase them down the street and try to rope them in or something like that. The easiest way is to, you know, put out some kind of a greeting or some kind of a question or something. I shake hands with people. I find that's a good connection. And in California, a lot of people, have you ever seen this kind of handshake? This is people are willing to shake hands when you do this. You put out your hand like this, California. And they'll come over, and then there's like a connection. They feel like, you know, they're connected to you a little bit. So we should, you know, be detached and let, like they say sometimes in sports, they say, let the game come to you. You know, you don't have to, just do the best you can in the situation, and you don't have to chase after it. So don't chase after people and think, you know, I got to get every person. Be a little detached and depend on Krishna and chant Hare Krishna and stand back a little bit. Let people come to you a little bit more than chasing them, you know, or running after them or something like that. And you'll find that it's very successful because people are attracted more to you when you're a little detached. Yes.
Sorry, I asked so many questions.
Oh, I'm glad you're
So after we have made the connection, now sometimes some people get into an argument. Okay, why this is so, why this philosophy, why not that philosophy? And then we try to explain them our philosophy, and then it goes into an endless circle. Because they have almost made up their mind that they are not really going to listen to what we are speaking. But they just, you know, they have some other philosophy, or they are following some other non-bona fide path, and they just keep going on saying, but why this, why that? So in that case, it's, okay, good. So if they're just innocent people are asking a question, we can reply with the question. But if they also have a philosophy, so do we now try to, if they're Mayavadis, do we smash them there for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, or what do we do?
We have to keep in mind that the first goal is to leave people with a good impression. We're going out into public. First of all, when you're in public, you should expect to be abused. We should expect that we're the ones going out and approaching them, and they're going out for a nice time and to have a milkshake or something like that, and we're interrupting them. Keep that in mind. We're the aggressors. And so we should be able to absorb a lot out there and expect that, you know, whatever happens to us while we're putting ourselves out in public, we deserve it because we're out in public. Think like that. Not that I have a right to a pristine existence out here and that, you know, nobody has the right to look at me askance or anything like that. It's the opposite. So then we should also have some goal in mind. I mean, if your goal's out there to give a Srimad Bhagavatam class to every person you meet, then go for it and stand on the street corner and you can talk for hours. And in one way, there's nothing wrong with that. But another way, in the case of efficiency, if you want to make sure that you engage them to the fullest possible, you have to understand that some people are locked in a philosophical kind of idea, and it's not really useful just to try to convince somebody of a different philosophy. People don't come to Krishna consciousness generally on the basis of being smashed in their philosophy on the street corner. Maybe 500 years ago it worked, but it doesn't nowadays. A man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You can lead a man to wisdom, but you can't make him think. So you have to realize that you're out there to, you know, to make some connection with people. And if they have some far-out philosophy, try to connect it rather than try to find the differences. Try to find the similarities so that they can actually be, brought in closer. Like, if someone starts spouting some philosophy to me that I think is off the wall, I try to find out what's interesting about it and just encourage them. And then bring them closer to taking the book or taking some prasadam. If they start telling me, you know, we're all one, we all come, you know, it doesn't matter what path you follow and stuff like that, and I say, yeah, that's what this book points out. Like, sometimes people say, like, yeah, I hate religion, you know, and I go, that's what this is about. This teaches that, religion tells people what to do. It's just cheating religion. This book shows you have to, it's your responsibility to find out for yourself, you know, and then it's like you go along with their mood, you know, what they're into, but present it in such a way, because this book is everything. It does have so many different things. Anyway, that's my style. I'm a little softer style, and I like to find out what the similarities are that people have so I can engage them. And if somebody's very argumentative or something, or obviously just wants to argue, and they've already decided that that's what their occupation is with you, I avoid them. Like, one of the ways I avoid fundamentalists, especially in America, you meet fundamentalist Christians. As soon as I see the Christian dogma being unpacked, then, and I can detect it. As soon as I detect it, I generally will say something like, you know, we need more people like you in the world. It's people of faith like you that are keeping the world afloat. And thank you very much for the work that you're doing. And I give them a heavy compliment for what I do appreciate about them, that they're people of faith. But it's just not going to work between you and me right now. That's in the parentheses. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying, you know, I really appreciate that you're a person of faith and keep up the good work. And then I break clean and let them go on their way. So the faster you can break away from people who are, you know, that want to argue, the better. And if you can avoid it artfully, you know, getting into huge philosophical debates, in my opinion, you're better off. But there is a place for it, too. Because if you stand and preach in public also, there are some sincere people. And if, you know, you're sincere and you're presenting the philosophy in a nice way, then they can also become convinced and hear something nice. But you have to balance. That's the thing. Yeah.
My experience also has been that these types of philosophical debates come up not just out on the street when you're distributing books, but also in social situations. And I've noticed that they run into long arguments, and people have their own philosophies. Somebody comes from Chinmaya Mission and says, well, this is what it is about Krishna. And so you start talking about what we have in Islam. And what I've noticed is that they end up in very, very long conversations, and sometimes you don't know what came out of it. That having gone through this, I've learned that it's best to say, well, I differ with you on that. And then they may say, in what way? And we say, well, it is in Prabhupada's book, or it is here, rather than entering into an intense discussion about the thing. Then as they ask questions, you can answer them, rather than to preach what our differences are with respect to that.
Thank you for that. Then there's a case in which Rupa and Sanatan Goswami were approached in Vrindavan by this great debater. And he had a list. Sometimes these debaters carried a list of all the people they had defeated, and they would have them sign it after they defeat them in a debate. So they approached Rupa and Sanatan, and he wanted to debate them. And they didn't have time for it. They didn't want to even enter into it, so they just said, here, give me the thing, I'll sign it. So they signed it. When they met Jiva Goswami, then he soundly defeated them, and Rupa and Sanatan became angry at him for doing that. You were going to make a point, Prabhuji?
I was going to say that in Gita, in the last chapter, Krishna also said that spiritual knowledge should not be taught to someone who is not faithful.
Yes. This is a good point. It's to those who are not austere or devoted, you shouldn't try to, you know, preach the Bhagavad Gita. So we're out there selecting people, you know, find people who are open-minded. And of course, it's a gray area because sometimes you don't know. Sometimes you'll start off with somebody and they're like, they're just not into it or whatever, and then all of a sudden they turn around and they take a book. It's the most pleasurable experience you can have, in my opinion, when you're out preaching, is what we call the reversal. In wrestling, you get like 3 points or something when, you know, the other guy's got you down, and then all of a sudden you turn the whole thing around and now you're in the advantage. And so here's a good example. Here's one that happened when I went out with Dainiti last year or 2 years ago. We went out to this cash and carry. And so Dainiti's talking to this guy from behind the table, and the guy goes, we're all God. And Dainiti goes, we're God-like. And he goes, no, we're all God. And he goes, we're God-like. Or he goes, no, the guy was saying, I'm God. And Dainiti said, you're God-like, you know. It was back and forth, and there was just a little bit of argument. And I was kind of like, you know, Dainiti, he knew what to say, and he stood up for what was in the book, and he just said it in such a matter-of-fact way. And there was a little argument. It was just a slight thing back and forth like that. And the guy walked away, and he put the books down and he went away. And he came back a half hour later and he goes, what was his exact words? It was unprecedented. He said something like, I take back what I said. Yes. He said, I take back everything I said. I'd like to buy your books. And he gave him $25. And I was thinking, now that's over the fence. You know, that's like, boom. So preaching's exciting too. It's dynamic. It's like anything can happen at any time because you're dealing with free will also. The soul's there, there's conditioning, the mind's there, you see the senses, you see the souls, you see the modes working. You might be in a downtown area where the modes interrupt things. Or you might be in the middle of talking to somebody who's just about ready to take a book and you've convinced them and they're just reaching for their wallet or something like that. And then all of a sudden, you know, their significant other comes over and goes, "Bobby, let's go. I told you 5 minutes ago." I'm like, what happened? Krishna, this person almost took it, you know, and then they're gone, just beyond your control. And then you suffer also because, like, what could I have done? I should have spoke faster. And then you do start speaking faster because you're looking around the environment like, you know, anyone could swoop in at any time. So when we're out there, it's a dynamic thing. And we have to become expert and be aware of our environment, of what's out there and who you're talking with. You know, sometimes you talk to a group of people where there's three people. When I do that, I try to find out who's the most negative person in the group first and then talk to them because they're the ones going to ruin it for everybody else. So I have to make friends with them first. And when they're happy, then everyone else could be happy. And so there are a lot of different, you know, nuances and things. And it's exciting and it's important and it's more fun than anything else. And you learn more doing this kind of thing than you do in any MBA course or any kind of training in anything. If you can learn how to do Sankirtan, you can do anything.